Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'll be your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs every first and third Sunday of every month. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. On Another Fork in the Road, I want to raise awareness of traumatic brain injury and to help others to understand what survivors and caregivers are experiencing. And I want to let them know that survivors can accomplish so much. On previous shows, I've told of my husband David's and my journey through the TBI maze. If you missed those shows, you can find them in the archives at On Demand at blogtalkradio.com/Brain Injury Radio. Now, this is the time that I always remember to say, make sure you've got a paper and pen next to you, because I often will jot out a URL that you might want to check into after the show. So have your paper pencil next to you so you can catch those URLs. Some of them I do put in several times. But anyhow, you can also go to my blog, and my shows are archived there as well. And it's really easy to find them there. So you can go to, don't go there. Go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And then just click on the air show menu. It's on the right-hand sidebar. Now, there are two on the airs, but you have to click on the air show menu because that will list all the shows that I have done since 2014. I started in August of 2014. I have we're all heading into 200 shows right now that I have done in those many years. So that's pretty interesting. I never even thought for a second that I would ever be doing radio hosting, and it just kind of fell in my lap, and I don't, when a challenge happens, I usually take it. And so I did, and I'm still here 9 years later. It's pretty crazy. So once you get to my on-the-air show menu, you can find all the shows I just said, almost 200 of them, will be there. And it'll give you a little blurb of who is my guest or who are my panelists, and the date and the time, and, of course, the link. The link goes right to it. So you can listen to it, and you can listen to it as many times as you want to, listen to part of it and go back later, whatever works for you. So on subsequent shows, I interview traumatic brain injury survivors and their caregivers, delving into their journeys to see how they traverse the world of TBI. And on some shows, I will have guests such as therapists and other medical professionals. I have a lot of authors on the show because I like to get that firsthand feel from an author's input on his or her book when they put it out, because you're really learning about what happened to one person. But although each brain injury is so different, and there is not another one like it, like a snowflake, I say, or like a fingerprint, you can relate to other people's issues that they're living with. Not all of them, but you can relate to, oh, yeah, that happens to me too. What does that person do to help out or to make it better for them or that sort of thing? And that's why I think it's good to listen into the shows and hear what folks have to say. And then on the panel shows, so on those shows with the guests, that would be on the third Sunday of every week, every month. I'm sorry. How many Sundays are in a week, I ask you? That's a riddle. See if you can figure it out. Don't. So how many on every Sunday, how many every Sunday in every month, the third one, you will have a medical or a professional, a therapist or someone like that, an author. And then there will be discussions of pertinent topics related to TBI or brain injury, not just TBI, but brain injury, including depression or fatigue or anger management or flooding, just to name a few topics. And those I do discuss with the panel. So I usually have two other people besides me. Sometimes there is only one because somebody, you know, with brain injury, you never know when somebody has to bow out for an unsuspecting reason. But sometimes we have four people. So, yeah, it's always fun. It's always fun to get all the different views on all of these things. And like I said, all of the survivors or the caregivers, too. We also invite the caregivers in. And so we can talk about depression, and we can get different people's views on it, the viewpoint from a person who is experiencing it or a caregiver who is experiencing it through maybe him or herself because of the situation they're in, or maybe they're overseeing their survivor going through something like that. So I think it's always important to get other people's input. It can always help you. Something. There's always going to be a tidbit that can help you. So I hope that you're going to find my show tonight fun and informative, and I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., and that would be Pacific time. So you just need to make your conversion across the United States all the way back to Eastern time, or actually make your conversion all the way across the world, because we are airing in 36 different countries. So not just the United States, Canada, and Mexico, but we're in 36 different countries. And if it's not being streamed live in those countries, you can always go to the internet and go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, because the shows will be there. So now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's coming up here. We're going to be talking about relationships, changing relationships after one has a brain injury. And that's a really tough topic, because it's sad, often very sad, about what happens when someone has a brain injury and relationships die or change. So let's just talk about what relationships are first. There are all kinds of relationships, and there are family relationships between spouses. That would be like David and me. Well, David has the brain injury, and I'm his caregiver and spouse. There are relationships between parents and children. And Deb and Dawn, both of my guests today, will be able to talk about that. There are relationships between siblings, and that can happen to all of us too, even though, David has different relationships with his family, his brothers, because of his brain injury, and even I, my relationship has changed with them. So there are kinships also between extended family members, grandparents, aunts and uncles and cousins. There are relationships between friends and acquaintances and workplace relationships. So basically, there are connections between folks make up the kind of relationship that they have. So some relationships are long-term, while others are short-lived. I mean, I have some girlfriends from high school age. You know, that goes back a long, long time. And we still have a relationship, not a brain injury relationship, but we still have a relationship that way. And lots of people have relationships that go way, way back. And they might be girlfriends or men friends, or it might be, siblings. A lot of siblings are very, very close, that kind of thing. So some relationships often happen naturally, and they're comfortable and cozy, while others may be rocky and turbulent, yet you're still in that relationship. So when it comes right down to it, relationships can be tricky under even the normal circumstances. They can definitely be tricky. So throw a brain injury into the mix, and the relationship equation may be completely upset. A brain injury often affects the personality of a survivor. A once calm person may lose his or her gentle veneer and become agitated. They may easily lose his or her temper. I should say he or she may lose his or her temper. And they may often become unruly and disagreeable. And it's hard to be around folks like that. And family and friends may not even recognize this new person. But too often, this result of brain injury sends a once happy marriage off the rails. Good friends before the injury may disappear because they no longer recognize the person who has returned in the body of their friend, but is not the same person. And this leads to feelings of abandonment for the survivors and for the caregivers when they're involved in a mutual friendship and that person disappears. And whose fault is it? It's nobody's. It's nobody's fault. It's not the survivor's fault for sure. He or she did not choose that altered life. They're probably just as confused at the difference in their personality as everyone else is. It's surely not the caregiver's fault, or the family or the friend's fault either. Yet the problem looms large and glaring with solutions in demand. So on tonight's show, Changing Relationships After Brain Injury, my panel and I are going to address this issue. So none of us are medical professionals, and we offer no medical advice. We are all part of the brain injury community as either a survivor or a caregiver, and we hope to talk about what has helped us. So I'm going to talk about Deb Brandon first. So let me introduce her. She is a survivor, brain injury survivor, and she is the author of her book, But My Brain Had Other Ideas, a memoir of recovery from brain injury. Deb is also a retired professor of mathematics at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And I always say this, that's my old stomping grounds because I was born outside Pittsburgh. And I went to college there, and so did David. And I'm also excited to say that Deb and I are co-authoring a book together, and we've finished the first draft. We're working. The working title is Conversations Between a Survivor and a Caregiver. You Are Not Alone. I'm not sure. Is that even right, Deb?
No.
I never remember the title. Okay, I didn't think so. Tell us the title so I can put it in my notes. I never remember this title. And you know what? David's going to be scolding me after the show because I don't think he's heard this part, because he writes it to me every show and tells me what it is. So, Deb, tell us the title.
Wait a minute. I have to look it up.
oh, no, this
surviving,
is bad.
Yeah, here we go. Surviving Brain Injury Together, A Conversation Between Survivor and Caregiver.
Okay. Okay, Surviving Brain Injury Together, A Conversation, I'm typing it down, between between survivor and caregiver?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, dear. Oh, I do this every time. Okay, I have it down there now. It's not spelled right, but it's in my notes now. All right, so folks, let's say that again just because I messed it up so badly. So Deb and I are co-authoring a book together. We are working on the summaries right now. We've already completed the second draft, actually, too, and are working on the summaries and the final draft for the editor. And the title is Surviving Brain Injury Together, A Conversation Between Survivor and Caregiver. Yes?
Yep.
Yes?
Yep.
Is that it?
That was.
I got it? Okay. Okay, good. Whoa. So you can read about Deb on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And again, in that search box, type Deb's name, Deb Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N. And then you'll see a Survivor Speak Out interview will pop up, and so will lots of shows of Another Fork on the Road in which Deb has appeared as a panelist. And you can also learn more about Deb at her website, DebBrandon.com. You can't get any easier than that. So check out all those sites, but wait, not now. Do it after the show or tomorrow. That works. Don Corbelli is the other panelist tonight, and Don Corbelli is a survivor of brain injury, and she's actually a caregiver as well. We're going to find out why in just a moment. But Dawn is the author of A Miracle a Day, One Day at a Time, Hope After Traumatic Brain Injury. And Dawn and her daughter, Veronica, are both survivors of a near-fatal car accident. Dawn shared her and her daughter's stories of recovery on Another Fork in the Road on the Brain Injury Radio Network on January 16th. Of 2022. So if you go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, again, go to that right sidebar and type Corbelli in the search box. And that's Corbelli. And you can listen to Dawn's story there because she has a whole show dedicated just to what happened to her and her daughter in that accident. So when I said that Dawn was a survivor and a caregiver, yes, she survived the accident, making her a survivor of brain injury, but she's also the caregiver for her daughter, who also has a brain injury. So Dawn, she straddles that fence, but she can see both sides. Deb, as a survivor, sees the survivor side. I, as a caregiver, see the caregiver side. But I also have a pretty good glance into the survivor side because I am watching David's survival and his recovery so closely. So definitely check those out after the show, folks. So Deb and Dawn, let's take a few minutes just to tell our audience a little bit about how you came to belong to the brain injury community. So Deb, let's just start with you. How did you get to be an honorary member of this group? Not a group you really want to be in, people, but if you're in it, you may as well have the company that goes with it.
I have a rare disease referred to as cavernous angioma or cavernoma or CCM. It's basically what's going on. I have clusters of malformed blood vessels in my brain, scattered throughout my brain, and they can bleed. And two of mine bled and turned my world upside down. And the only known treatment for this disease, the only way to prevent future bleeds, is to remove these clusters. And I ended up having three brain surgeries. The first two were to remove the two that had bled, and the third was an emergency. And
wow.
This all happened in 2007, and I've been on a journey to recovery since then. And you don't fully recover from a severe brain injury, but, you learn to live with it.
Yeah, and that's I was going to pick up on that comment. Because brain injury is forever. And, it's a long journey, and it's one that you just live through, and things do change somewhat sometimes. But, it's definitely a journey that you're going to be on, a new life that you're going to be living because of a brain injury, something that affected adversely your brain. So, Dawn, tell us how you ended up being part of the brain injury community.
My daughter and I were in a near-fatal car accident. We were just taking a trip to the store, to Walmart, and we were pulling out from a stop sign, and we were hit on the driver's side. We were T-boned by a 4x4 truck going 60, and we were going 5 miles an hour.
Oh, my God. Wow. You know, and that what's so remarkable is they say that most accidents happen really within just miles of your own home. And it's so true.
2 miles.
And you think, well, yeah, you're just going to the store, you know? You have your seatbelts on because that's what we do these days, thank goodness. But you have, and you're not thinking anything's going to happen. You're just going. And then all of a sudden, something as simple as somebody else not paying attention or maybe texting or whatever. We don't really know all the reasons people have their accidents. But that changes your life. It's, you know, your life as you knew it before is over. And you have a new life that you have to adopt and adapt to. So, yeah, that's really, it's really crazy. And your daughter was how old at that time, Dawn?
She was 15, and she's now 31.
Yeah. Wow. So for all those years, and to have somebody so young have to, you know, have their life ripped apart, ripped away from them, really.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunities that she could have had are no longer there. The relationships that she might have had are not available to her anymore as that, too, because, of course, I can say that some of the relationships may not be available to her anymore, but in other ways, there are other relationships that do come up because of a brain injury. And it's interesting how some mm-hmm. people will tell me that they are really grateful for some of the relationships that they have since their brain injury that they would never have had had they not had the brain injury. And I know that sounds ridiculous and weird, but I've met so many people that had David not had the brain injury, we would never have crossed paths. Now, Deb and I are told, you just mentioned earlier, we're co-authoring a book together. Well, number one, I would never have had the ability to write a book about brain injury, nor would I have known Deb to do it with. So, you know, it's funny how things happen that way and how you have to kind of adapt to it, I guess. Yeah, we're going to talk about a lot of those things within the show today about that. So, yeah. I don't know. Now I'm going to go back and just justify this. Deb, mm-hmm. yes, I love you dearly. But if I never met you and David never had a brain injury, what would I take, you know? Yeah. So yeah. it's kind of weird, you know what I mean? But you do. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you have a bad situation and then you make the best out of it. And that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, I'm very glad that I've met Deb, and I'm also very glad to have met Dawn, because we are in this situation and we are making the best of it. So
mm-hmm.
tonight our topic is changing relationships after brain injury. And I guess that's an inevitable change for many folks who either have a brain injury or for those caring for them. The brain is so often adversely affected in some form or another that it alters the person the survivor once was. So think about that, folks, as I'm talking to you. If you are the one that has the brain injury and you're listening to this show, how has your brain injury affected your life? How has it changed who you are and your relationships with other people? And if you happen to be the caregiver or the family friend member who is listening, how has the relationship of your survivor changed you? Because it has. It has to. So, for example, in my situation, when my husband David had a brain injury, resulting in 3 brain surgeries in less than 2 weeks, and that happened in 2005, his physical self was changed greatly. He doesn't look like the same person anymore because his face has gotten, it's like we call it crooked because his one side of his face is kind of paralyzed and it drooped and the other side is fine. And now the interesting part is one side of his face is got the wrinkles in it, and that's the paralyzed part. The other side that wasn't affected looks like he could still be 50 years old. You know, it's really crazy. And the other side looks more aged because of the brain injury. But, you know, that's kind of interesting. So his physical self definitely changed. I mean, and he suffers severe balance issues, making it difficult for him to walk unassisted. His right arm is ataxic. It has a mind of its own. And if you don't know the word ataxic, which I didn't until it came to hang out with us, but the hand isn't connected to what the brain is. It does whatever it wants with the hand. David is not able to say, take this person's hand. And you know, when you shake a hand, you just put your hand out automatically. The other person puts his or her hand out automatically and you shake. Well, David can't do that. His mind will say do it, but his arm won't. His arm won't do it. And he can often take his left arm, pick up his right arm, and put it into the other man's hand or the other woman's hand. You know, so that's what ataxic is. It's there's a disconnect there in the nervous system and how it works. It just doesn't work. He can no longer open a door handle, things like that. He might take some, he can do it, but it would take him a long time to force his brain and his hand to make the connection, and then he can do the twist. So, yeah, it's just really weird, all these things that you end up learning about. David's vision is blurry. It's tilted and it's double. And those are just some of David's daily, forever, lifelong changes. And those and many other afflictions have changed his life greatly and have affected his relationship with others. He's no longer able to do many of the activities that he freely did before his injury. And the biggest examples, I think, are he can no longer run. David was an avid runner. He came home from work almost every day, and he'd go out for a run. He'd come home, change out of his work clothes, go up to his bedroom and change into his gym clothes, and off he'd go. And he'd run to Lincoln School and back, up the hill and down the hill. You know, and that was something that was something I used to say in the hospital all the time to try to connect David back to the world. Is David, what about your run to Lincoln School and back, up the hill and down the hill, to Lincoln School and back, you know? And he remembers me saying that to him, even though he was in coma. But many race cars, that was another thing he loved to do. He became a race car driver when he was about 51 years of age. And so he was able to do that for about 6-7 years before the brain injury. And that was something he aspired to doing that since he was a teenager, I think. And he finally was able to get behind the wheel of race cars and loved it. Well, David can't even drive behind the regular wheel of a car or a golf cart for that matter. So things change very drastically, which also changes the kind of the person you are, the personality you have. And with us, many friends fell by the wayside when David was no longer able to participate in some of these activities that he did. Now, the running one was pretty much a solo activity, but the race one, we had a lot of friends on the racetrack, and it was a lot of fun meeting up with them. But when David was no longer able to race, some of those people, actually most of those people, disappeared, all of them by now. And, so it's really, it's hard. It's really, you know, it's a hard thing to have happen to you, but it happens to so many survivors. And I'm going to say it happens to caregivers because it happened to the survivor. Because many of those friends on the racetrack were friends of David's and mine. We were all friends in this, and I lost them too, which is a hard pill to swallow. But anyhow, that's what happened. So Dawn and Deb, have you found yourselves in situations like David's, where friends were lost because of not being able to participate any longer in shared activities? And Dawn, let's start with you this time.
We lost a lot of friends because Veronica became very sexually, motivated. She everything in her mind was about sex. And It was uncomfortable for people. And you know what? That happened to me too. And so people became uncomfortable. We did some things at parties and, yelled. I made a fool of myself, and I yelled all the things I wanted to do to my husband when I was really drunk and brain injured, and we were never invited back to that house again. Veronica was baring her chest, and we were quite the party people at that party, but we were never invited back, and we don't have those friends anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot of Veronica's friends from school, the same thing. At first, a lot of guys thought it was fun that she talked about sex all the time, but it wasn't good.
Yeah.
So
it does. Yeah, I get that totally. How people can get turned off on that, and yet when you were doing it, when Veronica was doing it, you weren't really aware of what you were doing and how you might have been turning people off, because that has to do with your filters. We all have filters.
Right.
You know, there's oftentimes you might want to say something and you don't say it. And we're going to talk about that a little further too. But it sounds to me like Veronica's filters have been damaged. And so she's not able to make that, the realization that, you know, that's not in polite company. You don't do that. But
it used to be so much worse.
Really? And I said, whose fault is it? And I said, it's not the survivor's fault, you know, for these things, because that isn't something she's choosing to do. It's something that's happened, wiring in her brain, the damage, the injury that's happened in her brain. And, so it can become very complicated that way. So you do end up losing people that, you know, you may have really had a good relationship with, and then they just, you know, kind of aren't there anymore. And it's sad.
They don't know what to do. It's different.
They don't, you know, and because we're not taught that, and nobody knows about it, you know. So when we're talking about these things here, if we've got people out in the, you know, the real world listening to what we're talking about and hearing this, that's why it will be helpful. That's why I always say the show is for not only survivors and their caregivers and family, but anyone who wants to learn more about brain injury. And the thing is, nobody's really interested in it because they don't really know much about it until it happens. And then you know too much about it. And that's basically what happened to us more than 18 years ago. I never knew about brain injury. Didn't know what it was all about. I didn't think about it. Never expected it to anything to impact my life like that, you know. And now, because David has a brain injury, I became very learned about it. I want to know as much as I can, and I want to help other people. And so that's one of the good reasons to have a show like this, to have a blog like my Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury blog. And I'm not just saying mine. There are a lot of people out there that have these venues, platforms that you can go check out. I know, Dawn, you have a blog about your brain injury, and you talk about things. And those are things where people can get the nitty-gritty stuff. They can hear what really does happen. It's not just something that research scientists are talking about or whatever like that. This is right down in the dirt, you know, in the ditch
I call it raw and real.
Yeah,
raw and real. So, Deb, what about you?
Because I tell everything. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
And that's what I just said. What did I just put that in one of our chapters, Deb. Didn't we just read that this week? I think I did. I did somewhere, whether it was a blog, maybe it was a blog post I did, I don't know. But I just put the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yeah, because that's what it is, you know? You just tell it all, because that's how other people are going to learn. That's how they're going to be able to relate. If you're just glossing over, and no one's going to really understand what's going on and how what's happening and what it all means and what is brain injury? How is it affecting somebody and that sort of thing? So, Deb, have you found yourself in situations like David where you've lost friends because you weren't able
absolutely.
To?
Absolutely. One, I mean, I didn't have the sex thing, but
again, because of filters, I became, loss of filters, I became much more, I at some point I was swearing much more than I usually do. That has, and in front of people who really have a problem with that. That was one thing, but also I believe between loss of filters and having to take a crash course in asking for help, I learned that if you put your trust in people, they'll reciprocate. And what's happened is I've told Donna many times, I used to be a really shy introvert. Now, people who didn't know me back then are amazed to hear that, because I'm a very outgoing extrovert. And I think there are a lot of people who knew me from back then aren't always comfortable with that. I mean, as Donna said, I was a professor of mathematics at Carnegie Mellon University. And so we're think mathematicians not exactly socially adept. I'm someone that they thought they knew. And what do they do with this person who opens her mouth and blah, 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 it all comes out? And a lot of them just were very uncomfortable with it. So that was one thing. Another thing was that, again, we're back to loss of filters. Disinhibition is a very common thing, which brings up the sex thing. It's very common amongst brain injury survivors that you lose that inhibition and you say things that might be inappropriate. So I used to run a summer institute of mathematics for undergraduate math majors from across the United States. And it was, the last few years were funded by NSA, and people from NSA would come and give a talk. They hire the most mathematicians in the U.S. They're known for that.
What is NSA, Deb? NSA, National is it science?
No. It's the NSA. Is it NSA? Yeah, it's the spy people. Security, National Security Agency. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay.
And one time, the person who takes care of all the logistics of funding came. And I'm telling, so one of the things that we targeted were minority students. And I was talking to her about the fact that often minority students coming from, some of the people we get don't have a strong enough background. So, you know, I was honest to her about this, and I said that we addressed that by having someone there to help them, to help bridge that gap. And we were talking, and everything was fine. And then she actually suggested that I go to NSA to work for a year on sabbatical. And you know, I was talking to the department head about it, and he was shocked that I was so honest about it, because you don't say that kind of thing, because we're talking minorities and. Do you mean they didn't have a good background? Well, what, I mean, and you just say, well, this was the fact of the matter. And she appreciated. Now, let me tell you what made this interesting was that the person I was talking to was African-American. And her reaction was, this person, and she was agreeing with me, and we were talking about that whole issue. And then, as I said, the next thing I know is I get invited to have a position at the NSA. But the department head was just horrified, because here I am talking about minorities to a minority, and that it might be disparaging and all that. But we're back to, you know, I just opened my mouth, whatever was in my brain came out. My relationship with my department head kind of, he didn't trust me after that. But, you changed. Another thing is, as you were talking about, Donna, was your interests change. And there's certain things you can't do anymore. So, and you start doing something, you get new interests that are more on par with your slower pace and everything. But the old interests, a lot of relationships are built around a common interest. And if you can't do certain things, that's it. That goes by the wayside.
Yeah, that's it too. That's exactly what happened with David in the racing, If you no longer have that glue that was the core of the relationship, that's gone. And so then it makes it more difficult to stick back to that person, to make the arrangements to go out to dinner or to meet it for lunch or whatever that you're going to do. It makes it a little bit more difficult because before you were just automatically meeting at the racetrack, because that's what we did, and now that's gone. So you had to make extra effort to do it. And frankly, it had to be extra effort on the other people's part. David's friend's part, because David wasn't able to call and say, let's go meet. It had to be them coming to our house to, and they lived in lower Manhattan, and they had to come over to we were in Netley. So they had to come over to New Jersey, And so, it makes it a little difficult. We're not meeting halfway and all that kind of stuff. Of course, we couldn't meet halfway anyhow because that would have been the Hudson River. But nonetheless, you know what I mean. So
there's also the aspect of a lot of people are uncomfortable around disability, and they're comparing you to the previous person, the old, in my case, they compare to that, and they just can't. They have trouble dealing with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what this particular person that I'm talking about now, and David misses him a lot, and so do I. We stayed friends with his wife, but they are separated now too. So we're still with his wife, so we still know her and hang out at times. But he misses that. He missed the camaraderie that he had with this other man that he really had a great respect for, and they had such a tight connection with the racing and could go out there and talk about their race, and they raced wheel to wheel many times, And it's hard. It's hard when you lose somebody like that. And I don't think he's ever going to hear me say this, but we miss him. We really wish that we could, spend some time with him. But again, you also have the reality, too, of life moving on, and it's not happening. So, you just do. You just have to do it. I'm going to go.
Veronica,
go ahead.
Veronica was a baseball manager, and she was in volleyball, and at one time she was captain of the volleyball team, and she couldn't do any of that physical stuff when she went back to school. So she basically lost all those friends. She had been popular and she knew everybody. And then when she came back, she was so different. She walked slow. She talked slow. She had to be in some special classes. She graduated on time with her original class, but with a lot less friends.
And that's got to be very hurtful, because you've got your best friend that you did everything with or your teammates that you did everything with and you liked, and then all of a sudden they're not there for you anymore. And that's got to hurt, on top of the brain injury, on top of that, and trying to figure out where your life is and what you're doing and what, looking up from the bottom and where are you? It's very confusing.
And for a teenager, especially, gee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh goodness,
she had she had a boyfriend.
No, go ahead.
And it was hard because one of the doctors told him she'll be back, like she'll come back, and she never did. And so eventually they broke up, but because she was so different, and she actually became, she got angry really easy. We call it going from white to red. You know, you're calm to all of a sudden you're so angry you see red. She would shake, and she actually had started getting physical with him. So they couldn't stay together. And what the saddest part was, it wasn't her doing it. It was the mix-up in her brain.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yep.
So I said before, whose fault is it? Not the survivors.
Yeah.
It's not the caregivers and the friends either. It's what happens to the brain, the mixed-up, you know, all the damage that happens up there in the brain. You know, it's interesting because the brain is such a fascinating tool, fascinating organ in our body. It controls everything. It runs us. You know, we're a body, but my hand just moved, you know, but it was my brain that made it move. You know, it's my brain that, you know, unconsciously makes me breathe. It's my brain that unconsciously makes my heart beat. You know, everything is controlled by our brain. I often call it like our computer, our motherboard, you know, and when something happens to your motherboard on your computer, you can see weird things going on. Have you ever seen, oh, this has happened to me on my old computers, where all of a sudden your cursor just scrolls for no reason. You know, you have, you're not even touching the computer and your cursor's moving. It's like, oh, my gosh, there's a ghost in there. But you know, it's something, there's something wrong in the motherboard. Something's happening up there in the wiring and the connections. And so what, that's kind of something like when you said Veronica says sexual things. And she never did it before. Well, something is misfiring up there to make that happen. And people don't get that. They don't, because they don't understand the working of the brain so much yet. I think that because of the brain injury, all the brain injury notoriety that we're hearing about, especially probably it goes back 8 to 10 years now when we're talking about the troops coming back from the Middle East wars. And they're coming back with IED, you know, they were near an IED, an improvised explosive device. And the reverberation from the big explosion caused damage to their brain. And then you got the football players that are getting concussion after concussion on the field. And we're finding out that, whoa, they're getting brain injury. Hello. I find that really one amazing. Like, really? Are you telling me you just figured this out? I mean, if you're getting hit on the head, I don't care if you have a helmet on or what. If you're getting hit on the head, you're causing yourself some brain damage. And so, you know, so people at least are finally taking notice of this. They're saying, oh, yeah, brain injury can happen. And, you know, all of these, you know, things now are becoming more known to us. And I think there's more research being done on it in the scientific field and in the medical field. And so we're getting to know a little bit more about it, thank goodness. But it's taken how many years? It's almost like, I always think about this as like back in the 50s, cancer was, it was prevalent, but it wasn't talked about. It was all hush, hush, you know, cancer, the big C word. And if you had cancer, that was a death threat. You know, it was awful. And then Betty Ford came out and talked about her cancer. And it became not that dreaded C word anymore. People were talking about it. They were acknowledging it. They were, and scientists were doing the research on it. And it was openly discussed in the news. And as you know, now, what, 50 years later, 25 years later, what is it? Oh, no, it's even more than that. So I said the 50s, holy gee, 70 years later, you know, everybody talks about cancer freely and openly, and it's accepted as something that's happening to people. But brain injury is just kind of brand new. I think it's only really coming. It's been here forever, but I'm saying acknowledging it now. And I think that the big thing that came out with the acknowledgement was when the football players when they started reporting it on the news about the football players, and when they reported it on the news about the troops. And those two things all happened around the same time. So you were hearing about brain injury, brain injury, brain injury. And so I think that's what we need to do. People need to hear about brain injury. They need to become familiar with it and know how devastating it is and what it can cause for the person who has one and the people that love that person, that the family and the friends and the relationships that go on. So I think that's one of the reasons why we are all sitting here right now, and one of the reasons why we've all written our books to help people. And hopefully you'll hear it before it happens so that you have some idea of what to do. So on that note, Don and Deb, survivors of brain injury go through personality changes, and we talked already about Veronica, that happening to her. They not only seem different to folks and to their family and their friends, but they also seem very different to themselves. You know, do either of you feel that way, or have you experienced those emotions from others? Now, we understand that Veronica probably does have a lot of feelings that she's not quite the same. But how about you, Dawn, and what about you, Deb? Do you feel that you are very different? Now, I know Deb from the extrovert and introvert, but do you feel that you have changed drastically from who you were to who you are now?
I do. I was reading something that I had written to somebody. I don't know why I made a copy of it. And it's something that I had said to someone in a support group. And I was so forward, and I wasn't soft. Like, I like to be kind mm-hmm. and soft. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was just reading what I wrote, and it just sounded so harsh. That's not who I want to be. And uh-huh. I'm get angry really easily. I have outbursts, and I'm on a medication for it, and it does help a lot, but it doesn't help all the time. And uh-huh. I didn't used to be like that. So those are the biggest things.
Well, that's interesting, Dawn. You know, because you realized the difference that was happening in you, and you were able to get help to compensate for it, to help to assist you with that those problems with the medication. And like you say, even if it doesn't help you all the time, if it keeps you on an even keel most of the time, then you're much better off. Because when someone is, when you're talking about going, I'll say off the rails, or your outburst, or you're talking, again, that sounds like without a filter. You said you were harsh,
mm-hmm.
and then you read it and thought,
yeah.
Oh, that's not me. That's not who I used to be. Who wrote that? And so you're
right.
At least realizing it for yourself. And hopefully other people be having the same kind of thing happen to them and say, oh, wow, maybe I need to see somebody and talk to somebody about it. Maybe I can get help too. You know, and that's just kind of like the realization of being able to hear these kinds of chats, the raw and the real chat, as you say. Deb, what
mm-hmm.
about you?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, and as you mentioned, as I used to be a shy introvert, and now I'm an eager extrovert. I mean, I'm interested in people in a way that I never was. I was really painfully shy. And now I'm much more outgoing.
And I can attest
going.
Right now that she is not. I'm sorry, I talked over you.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I was talking to students, and I was talking about how this changed, and they look at me and they go, there's no way you were shy. And I was. I was, you know, at parties, I'd always help in the kitchen because then you don't have to interact with anyone. It was, as I said, I was painfully shy. But also, you know, as a writer, I find myself wondering about things. And I know I wonder about things that I never used to. I mean, in terms of reflecting on things that I do, reflecting on who I am. And at first, until a few years ago, say 5 years ago,
I was convinced that I had not changed, because isn't it the temporal lobe supposed to change a personality? So don't tell me that my personality has changed, because of course it hasn't. My temporal lobe.
The frontal lobe does that. The frontal lobe is where your personality changes.
And that was not where I had my injury. So I was convinced that there was no change. And, you know, and I'm thinking about it more and more and I'm going, wait a minute. Just my mere behavior automatically, you know, your behavior changes. You respond to things differently. Yeah. Already that's a sign that your personality has changed. And it took me a long time to realize that. And the funny thing is, when I finally internalized that, it was almost a relief, which was odd. So, yeah, you have to change. Your circumstances change so dramatically, and you have to respond to them in a way that you can deal with it, and that, you know, your behavior just automatically changes. And your behavior, how people, that's what they see as your personality, is how you behave.
Exactly.
That's how they draw conclusions. And is that basic?
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
I have a friend.
Absolutely.
An after-injury friend that I'm really good friends with right now. But sometimes I'll say something in front of her, or I will tell her something that I said to someone, and her eyes get really big. Because it's surprising, the things that come out of my mouth. And I don't think I used to be as much like that.
it's amazing how we can laugh about it.
I mean, we can laugh about it, whereas before you knew about brain injury, wouldn't you think about it differently? You wouldn't laugh at it.
I would have thought they were so rude.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when you were talking about the sexual thoughts, I was thinking, when you mentioned that the boys at first thought it was funny, but then it got too much for them. Well, now I think about it and I go, oh, you know, I'm empathetic. And at the same time, I can laugh, you know, because I told you this story, Donna, that a couple of days after I came back from hospital, I was sitting at a neighbor's dinner table with the neighbor and her friend, and we were talking about, she was talking about a movie, but she couldn't remember the title. So the other friend says, "Oh, I know which one you mean, the one with the actor." And I'm thinking, well, I've been out of commission for a month now, but I want to join in on the conversation. I said, you know, so I had no clue what movie they were trying to talk about. So I said, well, I saw this video last night. It's brand new, just came out, really good. And I'm trying to give them the information. I go, it's the one with the actor with the hair. Now, at that point, we're all laughing.
I do that every day of my life. It's like charades in my house. I forget my words. I'll say, you know, that blonde lady, she was in a show that we watched last week. And my family will get it.
Yeah. Well,
they do.
Okay. Well, the next door neighbor was going through chemo, so she had chemo brain. Her friend was going through menopause, so she had the problematic cognition, you know, from hormones raging, and me, you know, the three of us together trying to have a conversation, you know.
Oh, if I could have been a fly on the wall. laughing about it is a good thing.
David and I have found that out right from the very beginning. Because there would be so many strange things that he would do or he'd try to say or whatever. And if I made light of it, then he didn't take it as seriously and worry about it as much. And we could laugh. And, you know, and that just kept everything more in perspective for us. At least that worked for us. And we still do. You know, sometimes we, you know, if somebody says something and the other person might take offense, and I usually do this where, and I'll just make a joke out of something, and then it just lightens everything. It just makes it easy, and then we can just move on without having a big problem over something. And so I am really a very ardent fan of laughter and just, you know, not taking yourself so seriously for any reason.
One thing, if you think about it, that ability to laugh at things like that so readily, that's a change in your personality, change in your behavior.
Yeah, it was a compensation tool. It was because it made our lives easier because we didn't get so fraught over some things. And, it is. Did change. It did change. Well, for me as a caregiver, I have changed a lot. Before, I would want everything yesterday. You know, if I was doing something, I wanted it done yesterday. And I'm going back kind of into that mode again now, but we're talking 18 years away. But when David first had his brain injury, and he would have to use the restroom, we would be at the therapy center, and he'd have to use the restroom. I'd have to get him over into the restroom, and then I'd have to wait, and I'd have to wait, and wait some more. I had to wait sometimes 25 minutes before he could get in, remember that Apex the can and everything? So he's got to get, you know, do all his personal things that way and get the belt off and not back on. And holy moly, with my patients the way it used to be, that was painful. That was very painful. But I had to learn not to be impatient, not to be like, what the heck are you doing in there? Let's go. You know, you could do that. Like, that's a normal reaction. You know, like, come on already, you know. But I had to realize that
I didn't have patience.
He didn't want to be in there
anymore.
Longer than he wanted to be.
I don't have patience anymore. I'm very, very impatient.
I had to learn it.
But not with Veronica.
I had to learn it. Uh-huh. Oh,
I'm not impatient with Veronica, though. There's just something that happened when she was injured. Things she does now is right.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what it is.
Well,
I just look at her and she's...
It's the mommy hormone? The mommy hormone.
The fact that she lived was...
Yeah.
The fact that she lived was just so incredible that when she was in the hospital, I just decided that... she's perfect now. I don't know why. But so I'm really, really patient with her.
And she probably needs that.
But that's the only person.
Really? Well, she deserves it, Dawn. She lived through that. She deserves that. So, you know how I told you guys before the show I had 9 questions ready and I was like, I don't know. I don't even know if I have enough. Well, we're only on my 4th question. And so it's like, I always said I overprep, and I did again. But let's see. Now I'm going to just look at my notes quickly and see which one I really want to get to because we're running out of time already. Let's go to this one. Did you know that there are about 30% of survivors of brain injury suffer from anger management and aggressive behavior? And I think that's not really surprising. The only thing that surprises me, though, about that figure is that I think the percentage is so low at 30%.
I think it's more.
I mean, I would think so, too. I got this out of some research thing. But when someone's life is so altered, it's understandable that they might be just a teensy-weensy bit upset and might be a little bit angry, you know? Being angry that you can no longer function as you once were able to is a really good cause to be angry. But what do you do about it? So I heard you both say that you think it's probably more, and I do too, obviously, from what I said here. But you know, so what do you do? What do you do about it? Can you relate, and what are your thoughts about anger and aggressive behavior after brain injury? Maybe how it related to you or how you might, in general feel.
Well, I am very, very, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm really accepting of people's behaviors now most of the time. If they're, acting out, because I'm always making an excuse for them. Maybe they have a brain injury. Maybe this is a horrible day for them. Maybe this, maybe that. I always make excuses for people of why they might be acting the way they are, so I don't get angry with them.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. I do that a lot, too, because I hear people talking about people in an adverse way. And I'll say a lot of it might be when they're talking about the homeless or the home challenged people, as the new term is. I don't know that many of them want to be out on the street homeless, but I do think that a lot of them probably have a brain injury. And I give them the grace of possibly that is the reason why they're out there. Maybe they are some of those veterans that we talked about earlier that came home with a brain injury because of IED explosions or something that happened to them on the field over there in the on the war field, the fighting field.
Yeah. Also, mental illness.
So I always like to,
you get
yes, exactly.
You can get mental illness from a brain injury.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah. In fact, Deb and I have talked about this where, and it might be in the book, I'm not sure, but probably a lot of people that are incarcerated that have done, things that are not acceptable to society, like killing somebody or bludgeoning somebody or stealing or something. You don't know what the story is, and I'm not condoning that behavior, but I am saying there might be a reason for it that we don't know about.
So
I think you have to be a little kind.
Yeah, we did talk about it in the book, and we looked it up, and it was 60% of prison inmates have a brain injury. I mean, that's an incredible number.
I think that's what we're having that conversation, Deb, and saying, they need help. They need the medical help.
Yeah.
So they needed it before they got themselves into this problem of whatever they did to get themselves into jail. But it's not being given to them. And that doesn't really talk about our relationships, but nonetheless, that is a major problem.
Oh,
kind of took a little tangent there.
Well, if you want to...
All right, I want to get into this...
Oh, go ahead.
I wanted to get into one last thing before we get off. Dr. Kreutzer, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, a psychologist advises, and I'm going to quote here, grieve for your old life and build a new one. And that sounds like good advice, although it may be very hard to follow. But I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts about letting go of your old life and seizing your new one?
It took a lot of counseling for me.
Yeah,
I had to learn that I wasn't. I had to learn that I wasn't stupid. Every day for 12 years, I would tell myself that I was stupid because of my deficits. And then I had this counselor. The simple sentence: "You are not stupid. You are injured." Changed my whole life.
Mm.
I have so much more confidence now.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Self-doubt is, amongst brain injury survivors, self-doubt is so common. I mean, I would hazard to say every brain injury survivor who still has some level of cognition feels so much self-doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Did I remember that correctly? Can I do this? I mean, I'm a mathematician. And going back to teach took me a long time to get back to teaching. And every time I went into the classroom, I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to answer a question. And, I thought that I was stupid. And
could I call myself a mathematician? Was I good enough to call myself a mathematician? I mean, there was just, it's big.
A lot of my confidence, now I have a new purpose. I am a huge advocate of brain injury awareness. I've told you before, Donna, Veronica and I have taught 30 classes now in high school classes about brain injuries. That's
that
over 800
so
people.
Yeah, that is so wonderful.
My
and that
new
should
purpose.
Be something that's in every high school. That should be
yeah.
in every high school. It should be at least a semester or something, or within the health department.
Even a week.
Amongst that the prevalence of brain injury in that age group is ridiculously high.
One out of 25.
Yeah.
High school students will have a brain injury by the time they graduate. That can be illness or physical, traumatic. But at any rate, there's a lot of people in high school that have brain injuries already.
Yeah.
And
the thing
is, think about it. How many of those students are out there playing physical sports? Not only football, but volleyball and soccer. You're hitting a ball. You're getting a ball that's coming at you at how many miles per hour, and you're hitting it with your own head, forced off, okay? Volleyball, same thing. You get hit in the head with that. And numerous other sports. Baseball is probably not getting hit in the head so much as the other sports. But, of course, it's just, that's the age. As a teenager, the younger ones, the 18 and younger, that are doing a lot of these sports. So it's not really surprising to me to hear that number. And frankly, I don't think there are many people in the world walking around that have not had a brain injury. How many of you have fallen off your tricycle, your head?
Mm-hmm.
How many of you have tripped or tripped on the sidewalk? How many of you have
fell off the monkey bar?
Fallen off of the swing? We've all fallen. We've all hit our heads. And because we didn't know about brain injury, they said, we have a concussion. You'll be okay. You'll sleep it off.
Right.
But, there may have not been major serious damage like a car accident or an angioma, cavernoma. I can't even say it, and I should. or a subarachnoid hemorrhage, an aneurysm. You don't have to have just those things. You could have had something, that happened to you as a child that you don't even know or remember anymore that maybe has affected some part of your brain, you'll probably never know that. Anyhow, folks, I am now looking at the time, and because we don't have a show coming on immediately after me tonight, I'm able to go a little longer. But usually I have a show coming on, so we have to jump off. But so your thoughts about letting go of your old life and seizing the new one. Yeah, you almost have to. You have to do that because otherwise, where are you going to go? You're stuck in a limbo. I'm going to do one more question just because we have a couple seconds. Many survivors and their caregivers do seek out help from psychologists, as we just talked about here in the question before, Dr. Kresser. And the psychologist can help them to adjust to their new struggles and their new normal. So what are your thoughts of seeking professional help? Now, Don, you said you did get professional help, so obviously you're a proponent of that. What about you, Deb?
Me too. One of the first, the first people I went to after I got back from hospital were the first one, my neurologist for follow-up and therapist, because I knew I couldn't deal with this on my own. It was just too big.
Mm-hmm.
Did the
person you talked to have experience with brain injuries? Because mine did.
No, she didn't, but I got a neuropsychologist, and he did know. So, yeah, that's very, very important.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I didn't think of it in those terms, well, I was kind of out of it. I didn't think of it as, oh, it's to get someone who knows about brain injury. But my neuropsychologist was really good with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And so that's one thing that people need to know, is that you should seek out the help.
Because you
can't always do this on your own. And you also very often need an advocate. For Deb, it was harder. You had your mom for a little bit. But if you have to have somebody there that's going to be in your corner, I was David's advocate. So I was the one that's trying to find out everything that I possibly could for him, getting him the proper placements that he needed in the extra care homes after he got out of the main hospital. But, you know, not everybody gets that because they just a person there to help them. Fortunately, I had to muddle through. I didn't know what I was doing, but at least I had the cognizance to be able to do it. Whereas David, if he didn't have me there, would have been floundering. He would have had no help at all, none. He would have been at the mercy of whoever his social worker was at that point. So I think that if you have a brain injury and can advocate for yourself, get help. Get some psychological help, because you can't do this by yourself. It's really devastating. Yeah. If you do have an advocate, if you are a caregiver, again, encourage your survivor to get help. Help that person to get help, because it'll actually help you too, you know, because that person is going to become more stabilized in his or her situation. And now I do have to get off, because then they're going to just shut me down totally. And that's happened before, and I don't want it to happen again. So I want to say thank you so much to Deb Brandon and Dawn Corbelli for joining me this evening. And I think this was a really informative discussion. It went by so fast. I told you before I got on here, I was like exhausted and falling asleep, and now I'm wide awake, raring to go. We could go on for another hour or two. I'm easy now. But there is a category on my website. I should say there are a lot of categories on my website, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, for survivors and caregivers. I do interviews from survivors and interviews from caregivers. So you do get the nitty-gritty of, or as Dawn would say, the raw and real of the people. I'm not going to take your term, Dawn, but the nitty-gritty of what people are really thinking and what's really happening to them during a brain injury. So there are brain injury resources. Whenever I get any information that I think will be helpful, I put that up there. There's one for shout-outs, for accomplishments, even big or small. I always like to tell about the one young woman who learned to tie her shoes. She was in her 20s. She learned to tie her red shoe. I still see the shoe. And that was a huge accomplishment. She tried and tried and tried for the longest time. And one day she said, guess what? I tied my shoe today. And I said, that is an itty bitty giant step. And I made a category and put it up on my website for people to shout out their accomplishments. So if you have an accomplishment you like to share, contact me. I'm at Donna O'Donnell Figursky at gmail.com. It's D-O-N-N-A O-D-O-N-N-E-L-L Figursky at gmail.com. Boy, you think I should have gotten a shorter name. But anyway, there's a place there for guest bloggers. And you can read about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. But for that book, you can read it on survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. But I would go to donnafigursky.com. There's a lot about my book there and more about brain injury and just more generalized about me and my life. And and there's even a page of the cast of Prisoners Without Bars, The Caregiver's Tale. There are pictures of just about everybody that could be in the book. You'll see a picture of them. So when you're reading about my cousin Kathy, you'll know who it is. Or if you're reading about Dr. Forget that, because that's going right out of my head. But whatever. He also wrote, oh gosh, forget it. He wrote the foreword in the book to, or the preface or something, the foreword. Anyhow, so please,
Donna.
And go to Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury today, because I just put up a new post. I think it was it's pretty much about relationships, but it's a very tiny post. What do you think? And if you have an opinion, tell me. Write it to me. Write on the blog, and I can see it, and I can answer you back. So please tune in next Sunday to hear host Lisa Dreyer on Mess with MS. And, we have to get going because it's almost 6:50 it is right now. But please
May I share my website?
Please do.
DawnCorbelli.com. Very easy.
Okay.
DawnCorbelli.com.
I learned after I did that real big one. And Deb, what is your website?
DebBrandon.com.
Yeah. And then I finally got smart and just put DonnaFigurski.com. So that's one of mine. But I have a lot of things. If you Google me, you will find more than you ever want to know. I'm sure if you Google Don Corbelli or Deb Brandon, you'll also find them too. So check it out, folks. And I will see you in 2 weeks on October 15th. And we will be having a guest that night. And it's still up in the air, so it'll be a surprise. So have a great weekend. Enjoy the new month of October and the beginning, fall starting. Just enjoy life, completely. And Don, thank you so much for being on tonight.
Thank you.
And Deb,
for having me.
Thanks. Oh, always. And Deb, thank you also for being on tonight. And I will see you tomorrow at our book meeting. So,
yep.
Good night, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.